I don't know if any of us really think that we are deserving of forgiveness. Because I think as Christians, maybe there's a piece of us that thinks if we think that, then we're arrogant. And we're moving past what God says. But he tells us very clearly, Mother.
Just very recently, I was talking to a relative and trying to get him to return to the Lord. And I'm not going to say he or she, I'm just going to say the person said, but I've done so many bad things. And I said, well, have you ever tried to kill anybody? Have you led people out? Have you led them on to kill people? Have you drove people to prison just for being a Christian? And well, of course, the answer was no. And I said, that's the apostle Paul.
Who tells us he's the chiefest of sinners and yet knows that to die is gain? And from a human standpoint, I think we would be maybe less than human if we didn't think about the fact that we have committed these sins. And it is frightening. We want to do what God has told us to do. But he's so clear about how he forgives us. Like Emily said, even he's there before we know we need him. He's there to offer his forgiveness and his love and his grace so that we can return to him. And I think what you were talking about, Mother, is one of the saddest things of all when people know and they say, but I can't be forgiven. And I have to say there is a little arrogance in that. I'm a greater sinner than anyone I know, and it's not true. It's not true, Yvonne.
Don't you think it's sometimes because we have memory and we remember that God forgets when he forgives us? And
sure.
Sometimes it's harder to forgive ourselves.
Absolutely. I'd be surprised if there is anyone in this room who's accountable in age to God, if there's not something that comes back in your mind that you wish you hadn't done. God's forgiven you for it, but you still know it. I'd be surprised if we were to share those kinds of things, and we won't, that there's not something in everyone's life that they wish would have been different. Amy?
Maybe sometimes it starts because we were initially guilty of the sin of self-righteousness and looking down on others' sin, so that when we suddenly are aware of the sin in our own life, we have a hard time forgiving ourselves because we see ourselves through the filter of how we used to see someone else instead of how God
right.
sees all of us. And I think, you know, Emily's wise to point us in the direction of how does God see this.
Right.
Because we can look through the wrong filters and be completely blinded to all the love that's available to us.
Yeah. And sometimes even that human part comes in. Somebody else knows what we've done. And we think, how can they ever forget it? But my very wise mother, when I was a kid, and I would say, my hair looks terrible, I don't want to go, or I don't like, you know, blah, 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 whatever I'm dithering about, she would say to me, what makes you think anybody's going to think about you on that level? You know, it's not important to other people past the fact of you're being a Christian, you're being saved, you're being forgiven. If you've done something and they knew about it, most human beings have a pretty short memory anyway. If you didn't do it to them, they're gonna forget, even if they meant to hang on to it. And Christians aren't going to want to hang on to it. So,
and if they do, then they have a sin.
They have a problem.
That doesn't belong to you.
That's right. So. That's right. Betty?
I was going to say that she also put it to the level of we need to be ready to forgive others.
Absolutely.
And so often we've grown up in this wonderful country, and it is a wonderful country, where we've had our rights. And when people do something against us,
rights.
We just like,
yeah,
you know, it's kind of like we puff ourselves up and say, wait a minute, they did that to me, that's not right. And I hear a lot of Christians through the years, they're hanging on to bitterness mm-hmm. and anger at someone for being wronged instead of turning the other cheek like we're told to do and
right.
things. But I hear it so many times, well, they have to come and seek forgiveness. They haven't asked to be forgiven.
Yeah.
And years ago, a wise person told me that, yes, they do have to ask for forgiveness, to be forgiven. But you need to be praying every day that they open their eyes and do that. Right. And you need to be ready to forgive them. So often we're almost praying that they don't.
Right. And where is the sin lying at that point? Yes, they need to ask for forgiveness, but we've sinned by having this closed heart and hoping that they won't be forgiven.
What's wrong there?
That's bad. That's really bad. And I always tell people I've been blessed with a bad memory. It's hard for me to hold a grudge because I can't remember what happened. So, you know, sometimes that's valuable. But holding a grudge is a really serious, serious wrong that Christians do one another. And it is such a waste of time. Because most of the time the other person doesn't know you're grudging against them. And so you're just being mad all by yourself. So, anyway, thank you very much, Emily. I'm very proud of you. Very, very proud of you. Because I know a whole lot of people would have not said, I'm getting through this, I'm going to go sit down. Good for you. It'll be much, much easier the next time you do it. And you don't have to do it next week or anything. But the next time you do it, it'll be much, much easier. All right, so now we have this book. Is anybody else afraid of this book? Because I am a little bit. It's going to be a study, a time where we really have to put ourselves into the study of the Word, but I think it will be really valuable. Let me start with a caveat. If at any time I'm off track on it, and that could very easily happen, please jump in right away, because this is difficult work. But, and we probably won't get into a whole lot of it today, but I think it's important to go into that little bit of introduction there where he talks about man and intelligent being, because right there you just decide you couldn't come. Well, I know how it is, Mother. Because there are a lot of people who look at this and go, I don't want to study geography. Well, in the first place, I think I really missed it because I didn't want to study geography when I was a kid. That didn't sound interesting to me at all. But it makes sense to me now because this, as he talks about, we're talking about real people who lived. They had to experience weather. They had to experience travel. They don't get enough rain. The food sources change. And all of the parts about the land influence their everyday lives, just like it does ours, probably more so than it does ours. I mean, if our crops fail here, we mostly can get them from somewhere else right now. We're fortunate. If theirs failed, then eat. And Roger talks about how he loves to read about those battles in the Old Testament. He said, now I want you to think about this. You've got David and you've got Goliath. They're shouting to each other. They are close enough that one guy's standing on them. They don't have anything electronic. They don't have a bullhorn. One guy's standing up here yelling at these guys over here, and they can hear him and respond. So how far away are they? You know, like that? And there's a little valley in between. This is not war like we know war. And so he's, David, this kid, is listening to this huge giant shout and say, come over here, I'm going to kill you. Come right down here in this valley, I'm going to kill you. So it was a completely different thing, and it's involved with the terrain. All these Bible stories, I don't like using that term because it sounds like they're made up things, but these Bible events and these people are all involved with this terrain. Think about the fact that how many years did the Israelite people, the Hebrew people, know they were going to go to a land that was going to be given to them? How can we really understand the Bible if we don't understand something about these lands? I think we understand it on a surface level, but I'm not sure that we get the depth. So I think it's going to be a really good study, even though it scares me to be teaching it. He says on that first page, we have to be aware of the tremendous influence that climate, terrain, and other geographical features have had on men. When Roger and I were talking about this book, another thing he said was, on those battles, think about who had the advantage. If you've got a strong army with chariots and you're on a flat plain, they got a real big advantage. But if you've got chariots and you're in this hilly country of Judea and the other guys can fight kind of a guerrilla warfare, those chariots and horses aren't doing them much good because they can't do that hilly stuff the way that just individual people with bows and arrows can. And he talks a little bit about how to read maps. When I was in Girl Scouts, they taught me to orient the map, turn the map the way you are, not keeping north to the top all the time. First time I was in the car with Roger, and I was supposed to be a navigator, which is, incidentally, the only place in our marriage that we struggle. We do not do that well at all. And I'm turning the map, you know, to get it. And he takes it and he turns it around so that north says, don't do that. I closed the map. I said, okay. I won't. But, I mean, reading a map is a little bit of a skill. And he talks about carefully numbering the maps, the ones we're going to create, the way he tells us to, because they're going to refer to them later. And it is a workbook. So, you know, you need to think about what the map is actually showing. I know that all of y'all have Bibles that have those maps in the back. Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid, they all pretty much looked like the same map to me. You know, there was the sea and there were some rivers. But they're not, of course. Because just like if you take a map of the city of Weatherford that you can get the Chamber of Commerce, I can see where Carol lives. I can see the roads, you know. But if I get a city of Parker County, I mean a map of Parker County, I'm probably not going to be able to see that level of detail. And he talks about that in here, that you got to pay attention to what the map is supposed to be, because it's going to be larger or smaller and show you different things and scale. See, I'm just commenting, Mom. Just offering my comments. Page 3, it says, no person today nor in any day past has lived and died in a vacuum. Each one is affected by his climate, by the lay of his land, by the political situation and political situations of others. And that's true with us today. If someone were planning to invade the United States, and somebody somewhere probably is, they're going to look at shorelines. They're going to look at populations, at ease of access into the country. So they're going to look at the lay of the land. It's going to be important geographically to know where we are. And it's the same was true in history. If you're going to try to attack Jerusalem, you've got to know that Jerusalem's up on a hill and you're going to be seen as you're coming up, and what are you going to do that? Now, on the other hand, if you're planning to take down Jericho and God's with you, it doesn't matter. You're going to walk around and blow horns and the walls are going to fall down. But for mere mortals, they're going to have to know this geography. So it feeds into what we know about the Bible stories. It's designed as a survey course. We won't touch everything. You can touch a lot of it. It's a big book. Now, did anybody do the little worksheet? Was that as hard for everybody else as it was for me? That was hard. I am at this moment asking Stan to do me a favor, and I found what I consider to be a pretty good timeline. Most of the timelines you see are actually lines, and those are kind of hard for me to... This is a list, and so I'm making a copy for y'all. It's not perfect, but it's got a pretty good outline of how things all the way through the Bible. So after I did mine, I found this and I checked it and wasn't exactly right on everything. Anybody want to share and we'll see if we got these right? What was number one?
Creation.
Yay! But we all got that one right. I think I have a pencil or a pen or something. Okay. So then number two,
flood.
The flood. Three,
Tower of Babel.
What was it? Tower of Babel. That was one of the ones where I got a little bit confused and had to rethink for a few minutes on that one.
Well, I looked for the first two or three or four, you know, and I read it,
Oh, yeah, well.
Yeah,
I know he said we're not supposed to look. He's not the boss of me. I looked. I did look.
I had Joel looking over my shoulder. And one way it does, Joel, he loves history and
yes.
geography.
And he is always right.
And he is like, y'all have the coolest book.
It was just the worst when I was his Bible class teacher. He's always right. If you mess up, he's going to tell you. And that's good. I mean, I always applauded him for it, but I was...
I
Joel's very, very bright and very attentive to detail.
He loves history and geography.
It is a cool book.
I didn't know that about him until one time when he was at our house and I had not been able to draw him out at all. And we got at the dinner table and something came up about some historical event, and I asked him if he knew, and he nodded, and he just came to life, and I was just like, I found it! I found the end with Joel!
Yeah.
You can't shut him up once he starts talking.
It's cool. That's really cool.
Well, we won't ask him about the shutdown of the government then, tonight, at services.
No, he will go on and on.
Probably. Number four?
Promises to Abraham.
Promises to Abraham. Five?
Plagues.
Plagues.
Say it again? Plagues. I didn't do nine.
We'll let you write it down now. Six? I've got it over here.
Given the law.
Yes.
I have an excuse too. I broke my glasses and I can't read any of it. I wish I had that excuse.
Now, Amy, I just saw your book.
No, I saw this. Came off your book. Where's that? I don't know.
There it goes. Okay, where were we? I've lost track. Where were we?
Six.
Okay, somewhere I put six. And y'all are giving a law? I debated on that because I thought it was kind of a between six and seven wandering. Because it's after. Yeah.
Well, they really didn't wander before. They went from Egypt to Mount Sinai. That wasn't wandering.
Well, that's true.
Wandering was really
later.
40 years
okay. I'm going to switch mine. I think you're right. But I did think about that. That was kind of.
And Moses came down from that mountain there.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we have six is giving the law, seven is wandering, eight,
conquest of Canaan,
nine,
judges.
My problem with this was I'd be doing just fine, and then I'd realize I had not seen one, like the flood. Okay, erase, go back and renumber. Because that happened to me on the judges. I was going through, and I went back and went, well, wait, the judges were earlier. 10, United Kingdom. 11,
Divided
Kingdom. 12, the Assyrian captivity. What?
Assyrian.
Yeah. 13,
Babylonian
captivity. And you know, when I was reading through this last night, and admittedly I was on some pretty heavy drugs, I was reading Assyrian captivity, Assyrian, and all I could think of was Babylonian, and then I went, wait a minute, northern tribes, there we go, okay. 13's Babylonian captivity, 14,
return.
15, years of biblical silence, 16,
birth of Jesus,
17, establishment of the church. 18. Paul's preaching journeys.
Was that before the persecution?
Paul was persecuting.
But the Roman government was not. I mean, yes, to some degree, but they were kind of trying to stay out of it.
Doing the first part.
Right. They were trying to stay out of it.
Okay, now, what is number
17? 17 would be the establishment of the church. 18, Paul's preaching journeys. 19, Paul in prison. 20, Roman persecution. Because remember, this is when they've been told that Jerusalem's going to fall, that there's going to be all this time of horror and stress and persecution. That's when the Roman government decided to actively try to get rid of, well, I think the Jews and the Christians. I don't think they liked anybody. And then the 21. Destruction of Jerusalem.
Now read
18. I got to find it here. Paul's preaching.
Thank you so much, Sam. Really, look at the tolls in it and everything.
Do you want me to pass those?
Would you?
You finish
that would be nice. Thank you.
One's
Okay. Did y'all get that? Did you get finished with the list?
Yeah.
All right. This is a timeline. Again, it's not a perfect timeline, but I think it's pretty good. I like the way it's laid out. And I only did 20. If there aren't enough, we'll run some more, but I don't know how many people are going to be here today. So you may have to hang out with me afterwards for a few minutes, and we'll do some more. Because I have the original. Yeah, well, I'll do some more after class.
I'll leave off the ones that attend here.
Okay. Okay. I've got the original here. We can make some more right after class. So. Okay. Well, here's an extra right here. There's an extra.
There is an extra. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah. So, I don't have the rest of mine because the printer was messing up. Mine only goes down through Solomon, but I've got the original over there. All right, do I need to print any more after class, or did we get enough? Yeah, I'll print some more because Yvonne will tell me he's not here, won't you? Yeah, Opal's not here, Bonnie. Yeah. Sharon's not here.
Stacy
went off, but I wasn't sure it was the right.
Oh, okay.
No, I have the original over there. So I'll make several more. Just because I thought it was a good handy reference. And I will be trying to bring other things into class as we go along that might help us as we make this little journey. So now we're looking at the first actual lesson, lesson two. It says, the story of the Bible centers around the small land of Palestine. If you're in East Texas, it's Palestine. Because that's what that city is over there. Other nations are mentioned only as they in turn come into contact with this land. This is the focus of our study throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament. It's the what people now call the Holy Lands. It's called by several names. Let's see, we have some scriptures here. Let's go ahead and assign them. Betty, would you read Genesis 10:6 and then 15 through 20, that first set there? Amy, I'm going to pass you by. You're busy. Pat, Genesis 12:7. You want to read, Hope? Genesis 15, 18 through 20. No, okay, Debbie, Genesis 15, 18 through 21. Emily, Genesis 32, 24 through 32. And then that's all in that first group. So, it's called several names, and we're going to read what some of these names are, but they're all referring to the same little bit of land that we're going to be studying. Betty?
Okay. Chapter 10, verse 6. The sons of Ham were Cush, Mizraim, Put, and Canaan. 15 through 20.
I think Genesis 12:7.
Oh, I thought you said Genesis 10.
I may have. That doesn't mean I was right. Genesis 12:7 is the right one. I'm sorry.
No, I had 12:7.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry.
This is the first paragraph.
Yeah, in 15 through 20.
That it was coming through his
right.
son.
Right, I'm sorry.
Through Ham's and...
Through
Ham and then his son Canaan.
Okay, sorry.
In verse 15, Canaan begot Sidon, his firstborn, and Heth, the Jebusite, the Amorite, and the Girgashite, the Hivite, the Arkite, and the Sinite, the Abradite, the Zemarite and the Hamathite. Afterward, the families of the Canaanites were dispersed. And the border of the Canaanites was from Sidon as you go toward Gerar, as far as Gaza. And then you go toward Sodom, Gomorrah, Admah, and Zeboim, as far as Lasha. These were the sons of Ham according to their families, according to their languages, and in their lands, and in their nations.
Thank you. I'm sorry I gave you the wrong one.
That's
I think it's really important that we remember, and we all know, but sometimes we don't think about it, we're all descended from the same people. And this wasn't far enough down the descent that they didn't understand there was some relationship there to the Canaanites. I think this must have been a hard task for some of them. Just in concept, we're going to take the land, we're going to kill everybody. It's what God said do, and so they did it in faith. But I'm sure that there were some human emotions in that, don't you think? I'm guessing. I'm making an assumption. And we know there were some when it comes to greed, but I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about the idea of killing all the inhabitants of the land was bound to have been difficult for some of them.
I was going to say, this being a summary chapter, sometimes we get confused because we read everything and we think it's all in order.
Right.
Especially the first couple of books. They're all in order through like Joshua and Judges
yeah.
and things. But this definitely is after chapter 11 because it says according to their languages.
Right. And we know that the languages were split. Right.
They were all one language and then God split up the languages.
Right. Important to note. The Bible that I've brought with me for this study is the chronological Bible. And I love this thing. It is so interesting to read through as things are happening. So this is the one I'm using for this study. But I got this in case I need to look something up. It's hard to look stuff up in that one. Okay. So it's called Canaan because it came through that lineage, and those people eventually became the Canaanites through Ham. All right, it's also called the land of Promised Land. I'm sorry, now Patsy, Genesis 12. Yeah.
Genesis 12 and 7. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your descendants I will give this land. And there he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. On the same day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, to your descendants I've given this land, from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates. The Kenites, the Kenizzites, and the Kadamites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Rephaim, and the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Gershonites, and the Jebusites.
Okay, so it's called the Promised Land. Why?
Part of the promise
to Abraham. And maybe we forget to say that to the children sometimes. We refer to it as the Promised Land. Sometimes maybe we forget to hook that back to what that means. It's because of a promise to Abraham. And as y'all are trying to read these names, just remember that nobody else knows how to pronounce them either. So however you say them is right. Don't worry about it. The land of Israel, Genesis 32.
Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When he saw that he had not prevailed against him, he touched the socket of his thigh, so that the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated while he wrestled with him. Then he said, let me go, for the dawn is breaking. But he said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. So he said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. He said, your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. Then Jacob asked him and said, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you ask my name? And he blessed him there. So Jacob named the place Peniel, where he said, I have seen God face to face, yet my life has been preserved. Now the sun rose upon him just as he crossed over, and he was limping on his thigh. Therefore to this day the sons of Israel do not eat the sinew of the hip, which is on the socket of the thigh, because he touched the socket of Jacob's thigh, and the sinew of the hip. Sorry?
Mm. the land of Israel. Jacob became Israel. And the promises didn't happen, of course, in Abraham's time. They happened much later. But this was another way the name became known. And I think it gets a little confusing, particularly probably not for those of us who've been doing this kind of study for our entire lives. But if you talk to someone who doesn't know anything about the Bible, it could be confusing for them. They hear you talking about the land of Canaan, the promised land, Israel, Palestine, and they're going, where are all these places? And it's important to just be able to note to them why it has so many names. And that's true today. I mean, anybody want to take out a globe from 10 years ago? You may as well throw that thing away. Because none of those countries, some of them don't exist at all, and the ones that do have different names. And so, you know, you just, they might be of historical value, but they're not very good for actual referencing. We were at Mark and Amy's house one night. We were playing a game, and I said Russia, and it was USSR because the game was from then. And I didn't think that was quite fair since USSR doesn't exist anymore, but, you know, we lost anyway, didn't we, Amy? What can you say? Okay. So the Roman government, after the destruction of Jerusalem, well, really even before then, how did the Roman government work when they took things over? What did they do? I mean, because at one time, they encompassed the known world. How did they handle that politically? The Roman government would come in, they'd set a pontiff or somebody in place to make sure that Roman laws were followed. However, outside actual Roman laws, they left the culture in place. They left the local religion in place, the local language in place, because they were controlling the world. And they figured that the easiest way to keep from having uprisings all the time was to bother the people as little as possible. As long as they were paying their taxes, as long as they were following the Roman rules that superseded everything else. So, while they were not kind overseers, they were sort of over here. You know, live your life, just don't mess anything up according to the rules of the Roman government. And other than that, people could kind of go about their daily business. But they did indeed control it. And in the time of Christ, this became a huge issue. Probably was even before that, as long as the Romans were in place, because the Jews knew they had their own law and their own country, and they came from God, and how dare the Romans try to do anything to them. So there's constant uprising, constant rebellion. Now, I do think it's important to note that when Christ was being tried, what did the Jews do? They slid into the, he needs to go to the Roman pontiff. You know, y'all need to take care of this. Because that was an easy way, they thought, to get what they wanted, as opposed to having to accept responsibility. So they were very able and ready to manipulate the system in whatever way it worked for them. Not unlike most of the politicians today.
Well, they had to go to the Roman government because the one thing they didn't have was the right to put anybody to death.
They couldn't execute.
They could use their laws up to that point. At that point, it became Roman government.
And because they wanted him put to death,
they had to go. And they used this little tricky thing about he was king of the Jews.
Right.
Well, they didn't want a king ruler.
Right.
So, of course, the Roman government.
Right. But they also didn't say through law, through our Jewish law, this man's worthy of death. They just want him gone. You know, so they appealed to the Roman law.
Well, through their Jewish law, he was guilty of death because they accused him of blasphemy.
If he were a blasphemer.
But they were convinced. Well,
they wanted him to be.
Yeah. They lied to themselves, but really and truly that was.
But you're true. Under Jewish law, that would have been reason
for
death. But I think we have enough evidence to support that some of them absolutely knew who he was. They just didn't want it. He didn't fit their description, their ideal of what their king was going to be, because their king was going to overthrow the Romans and bring them back to glory. And this guy wasn't making any promises like that.
Well, he was also taking their followers.
Right, right. They
wanted everybody to bow down to them.
Yeah, yeah. So there were a lot of reasons for animosity here. And they used whatever they had. They used the Jewish law up to a point, then they threw it to the Romans. But the point was, get rid of this guy. He's creating problems. And I still think, and my brain's not working very well today, who was it that said, leave him alone if he's of God? You can't do anything about it anyway. Who was that?
Comedian.
He said, you know, whatever you do, if he's of man, it's going to go away. If he's of God, you can't fix it anyway. Which I thought was, I've always thought that that was such a good comment for us for our lives. If we have been wounded, hurt, if that person is the right kind of person, they're going to make it right. If they're not the right kind of person, your railing against them won't fix it. It just won't. Okay. Names for God's people. They were called Hebrews, which means what? Stranger, foreigner, wanderer. And just on that little aside, I've always been amazed at that strength of faith. Abraham, pick up, I'm going to show you where you need to go. Okay? Most of us would be going, I need more information. Where am I going? When will I get there? You know, what will it be like when I get there? God said, pick it up, I'll show you.
And we weren't talking about Abraham and his wife left. We were talking about
all the servants, all the relatives, all the animals. Pick it up, let's go. I'll let you know when you get there. And most people, not everybody, but most people have a need to have a home and to have a place that they go back to. There's some people with wanderlust that want to, you know, but I don't get the impression that that was Abraham. You know, he,
God spoke directly to them back then, mm-hmm. also.
Right.
I don't know about today.
Yeah. And there's a part of me that says, well, yeah, God's talking to you. You're going to pick up and go. But then what do we know about the rich man and Lazarus? And God said, they had the prophets. If they're not going to listen to them, they're not going to listen to you coming back from the dead. So there's some reason to believe that there's resistance on a human level no matter what. I mean, first of all, and we don't know. We know that God spoke to the patriarchs. Was this on a regular basis? Or did this happen once in their lifetime? Or, you know, I don't know. But I think if it never happened and all of a sudden God's talking to you, it's going to be quite the distressing, confusing moment.
When he spoke to Moses, you know, Moses made, what, 5 excuses? Yeah.
I can't do that. I don't speak well.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
Yeah, when somebody came to him, and all he requested of him to sell what you had, and give it to the poor. Well, his family feeds for the next.
Yeah. So, yes, my human brain wants to say, if God spoke to me directly, I'd absolutely do whatever he said. I sure want to think I would.
But he's speaking to you.
He is, right here. It's right here.
Peter, at first, said okay when he walked on the water.
Yeah. Didn't last very long for him.
We're not given any information on Sarah's response to it.
Right.
When he first tells her,
back up.
We're leaving.
Yeah.
That took a lot of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was any resistance on her part, it took a lot of courage on his part
to say
no, we are going.
Yeah. And I think we have enough information about Sarah to think there may have been some resistance. We have some stories about Sarah.
And,
yeah. or some, are you kidding me?
You know. Because God didn't speak to her.
Right.
Not that she would have demanded.
No.
But she didn't hear it, so she's having to trust in what Abram tells her that God has said.
And I, of course, am making a huge assumption. I'm just saying we have some stories about Sarah that tell she was a strong-minded woman and kind of wanted things to go her way. Okay, so Hebrews was one term. But then Israelites, children of Israel, were actually the descendants of Jacob, the descendants of Israel. And that comes into use later after what? After there becomes an Israel.
Right.
You know,
nation splits.
Well, and it can't be happening under Abraham because it's Israel's name. So they become the Israelites. Then it leaves out one that is so universally used throughout the Bible, children of God. They were of his kingdom. They were his nation. They were his. So that's not mentioned in here. But the term Jew came into play when we were mostly talking about the kingdom of Judah. That was all that was left. And it didn't apply when the whole country was the United Kingdom.
Actually, didn't it come out of being in captivity and was used in Babylon?
What? Jews? I'd have to look.
If you read through, it's not used until then. Until after captivity.
Well,
they're called Judah.
Okay, so you're saying it wasn't then before then, yeah.
Coming up with the actual word Jew.
Yeah, my point was it didn't happen until there was only Judah left.
Yeah.
But yes, you could be right that it happened in the Babylonian captivity.
It was shortened to Jew.
And then it talks about Palestine being a tiny, tiny country. And he references Alabama here because they live in Alabama, the people who wrote this book. But when I have some software ordered, and we're going to be able to do some PowerPoint things, and we'll do some comparisons and put Palestine inside Texas.
I was teaching fourth graders once, and we were in the Old Testament and always talking about this piece of land that God had promised them, and the kids finally wanted to know if it still exists today. Where is it? Mm-hmm. Where is this land? So we got a world map. And they were in awe of just this
little sliver of
thing concerning, in all the world around it. They got this little piece of land, and yet there's a whole Bible built around this.
And it's still, this tiny little sliver of land still controls world events to a great degree because people have a misunderstanding of what that land was. It influences American politics. Because for many, many years, the Congress has been on the side of we need to support Israel in whatever. Because there's this mistaken belief that it still is God's promised land and we need to keep it holy.
And there isn't a land of Palestine today, is there? I mean, there's Palestinians, but I mean,
well, somebody help me out on today's geography. I think... And I'm only guessing here because I would have to go study it. But I think the Palestinian people believe that what we refer to as Israel is their Palestine. And that they would take it over and live there and it would be the country of Palestine. But I'm trying, you can ask Joel to clear that up for us. But I think that's it. I think it's still that same piece of land. But there's no country right now called Palestine. But I think the Palestinians don't refer to Israel, if I'm correct in that. Okay, we're almost out of time. If it weren't for the story of the Bible, we wouldn't have heard of this little piece of land. It's insignificant in its geography, in its place in the world, other than its relationship to the Bible. If it were not for this, nobody would in the United States Congress would be sending support money to Israel. Well, I don't know, we send support money to a lot of people, maybe we would be. But it's it talks about how it varies, it's got a wide variety of temperatures. It's got different topographies. It has coastal lands. It has mountainous regions. And at one point, Lebanon, we hear about the cedars of Lebanon. And so I do think the area has changed. I look at it now and I think, really, a land of milk and honey? That's hard for me to grasp, seeing the current geography and climate of it. But we know that it was a very bountiful land, and I think still is, with some products. You know, how many of the olives in the world come from that area? Olive oil. All right, on that first kind of introductory lesson, questions, comments? Next time we're going to start on lesson three, we're going to be doing maps. It suggests using map pencils instead of markers or crayons, because you're going to label things, and you can't label very well on top of waxy crayon.
Looking at the topography of the land and things, it brings to mind when we did have a divided kingdom, and as you're reading through each of the kings and things, some of them would be a little bit better than the one before them, but the northern kingdom generally didn't have anybody good. But it would talk about the high places, about the
right, the altars,
the altars that
places.
They had set up in high places. And there's a lot of high places mm-hmm. available to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that even some of the good kings, they would go back almost, mm-hmm. but they wouldn't get rid of the high places.
Couldn't quite let go of that.
And sometimes I think that we have some high places of our own that are not, they're not necessarily false gods or something, but that we have a few things that we just keep reserved. And we go almost all the way to God, but we just kind of keep a few high places.
And the sad thing about that was, not most of those horrible kings, but I think some of the people probably were trying to serve God in this way. But it was the wrong way. And it wasn't acceptable. And I think that's something we have to really consider, that just because we think it's good doesn't mean God does.
Never has.
Never has.
Still
doesn't. No. I, you know, this friend I talk about pretty often, the other day she said, "I just don't get why you go there." And I said, "You know, I'm going to try to explain something to you, because I'm tired of you rolling your eyes at me whenever I give you an explanation." I said, what God said in the Bible is what we try to do. That's all. If it's there, we do it. If it's not there, we don't do it. She said, "Well, I had another friend, and she belonged to one of your churches." This is how she talks about my faith. And she was not allowed to teach, because I had said something about teaching this class. And I said, "Well, I teach women, but I would not teach men, because that's not appropriate." And she said, "Doesn't that ever just make you mad?" I said, "No." She said, "Oh, I can't talk about this anymore. It's just making me furious." I said, "Okay." Because she knows me as a teacher. I've done this my whole life. I get up in front of people and I talk. And she cannot understand why I don't want to be the preacher. She doesn't get it. We'll continue our discussions with her and see if we ever make any inroads. But I'm not holding my breath on that one. All right. Thanks, ladies. And I appreciate your being patient with me as we go through this, because it scares me.
Give us a camp. What are we going to prepare for? Lesson three, then?
Lesson three.
For next week.
Mm-hmm. I have great hopes that we're actually going to do a lesson a week.
Okay.
We'll see. But that is my intent. It's hard. It's hard stuff. But I do think it'll be valuable.
16.
Did everybody get a book? Everybody get their book?